Thanks for downloading the podcast. Be sure to like the Polite Politics community fan page on Facebook and be sure to tell your friends. Welcome into the Polite Politics podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Page. Got a great show for you today. I know some of you will be listening to this before Super Tuesday and some of you after. We're not going to touch on the election today. We're instead going to talk on something that's a little bit related, and that's the Supreme Court. As you know, Justice Antonin Scalia recently passed away, and there is a vacancy on the court. I'm going to talk a little bit about what the issue is, because you've probably seen a lot of news about it. I'm going to talk about the history of this, what's happened, and why people are freaking out, and let you know what Republicans and Democrats are saying. So let's start with why this is an issue. The role of the Supreme Court is to protect the Constitution. It's the final court in the land. Its word is pretty much final. Within the legal community and within the larger political community, there is a debate of this notion of our Constitution. What is it? Should it be living? Should the words take on new meaning based on the times to fit the times? Or should it be treated as it was originally meant, which is a little more democratic of an idea, not democratic the party. Democrats actually tend to prefer the living Constitution. Republicans tend to prefer more the originalism. But the idea of judges kind of interpreting with a living Constitution is a little less democratic, but a little more scholars tend to like it, I think, because it probably opens up more room for scholarship, but there's room for that understanding. Versus the originalism, which is a little more democratic, says, look, the Constitution was voted on by people. People have a choice in which way they're going to approach it. And if you don't like the Constitution, you can amend it. The court right now is divided. Some media misleadingly try to say that it is 4 liberals and 5 conservatives, and that's not really true. What you really have is 9 different judges with 9 different philosophies. Some agree more with each other than others. A lot of major cases, well, not a lot. Some major cases have broken down on a 5-4 vote, and they tend to be the same judges going each way. Sometimes they portray it as Anthony Kennedy as the middle swing justice, but that's not always true. The media, as I said, have misleadingly called this a conservative court, by which they mean that it's not giving Democrats everything they want. But to be fair, in the last few years, this court has created a right to gay marriage around the country. It has upheld Obamacare and protected it. So I don't think the notion of conservative is fair, and the judges change. I'm going to post a link, SCOTUS blog, which is the most influential blog on the Supreme Court, keeps statistics on how often judges vote with each other. And what you'll see is it's not as clear-cut as liberals and conservatives as the media would have you believe. It's a little misleading and it's sloppy journalism, but hey, this is America, right? So what happened? Judge Scalia died. There is technically a vacancy on the court. Now, it should be noted that the Constitution does not say how many justices there are on the court. There have been different numbers throughout time at different times. But of late, we have had 9 justices on the court, and so it's perceived that there's a vacancy. So what's the real history? Well, first, I would say that late in presidency appointments have been controversial since the start of this country. Probably the most influential Supreme Court decision in the history of our country is called Marbury v. Madison, and it was actually about a last-minute appointment and some debates regarding that. Now, up until really the 1980s, a little bit in the 1960s, but mostly getting into the 1980s, judges were voted on just based on their ethics and qualifications. Most justices were confirmed by large majorities, especially in the post-World War II era. But on July 1st, 1987, President Reagan nominated someone who was ethical and who was qualified, but who was ideologically somewhat extreme, named Robert Bork. And Bork's nomination was defeated purely on ideological grounds. A few months later, President Reagan floated the idea of Douglas Ginsburg. He was also rejected. And so in November 1987, President Reagan nominated Anthony Kennedy, who's currently on the court, and he was confirmed in February 1988, which was an election year. Now, Bork and other subsequent justices have faced ideological scrutiny. It's not just about ethics. Now it's about, do we agree with how you're going to vote on things? And in that vein, with the exception of Kennedy, who, remember, was President Reagan's third choice, we haven't had a president successfully put someone on the Supreme Court that they nominated in the last year, in an election year, right? When the other party controls the Senate, and that's the key. Remember, the Senate has to vote to confirm a Supreme Court nominee. It hasn't happened in over 80 years. Now, the history here gets a little interesting because, you know, when I used to do debate in high school, you would have these awkward moments where you'd be assigned a topic to debate, right? And you'd go into the next room and you'd be assigned the opposite topic. And so you could go into one room and argue one thing and go into the other room and argue the exact opposite. And it was normal. And it was a game, so it was okay. But in politics, sometimes arguing about the debt, arguing about obstruction, these are things that our political leaders do, which is a little more of a problem because, of course, it's not just a game. It's real and meaningful. And here we have seen both parties flip sides. I want to give you a few examples. First of all, leading Democrats have opposed nominations on ideological grounds in the past. President Obama, Vice President Biden, Hillary Clinton all tried to block even holding a vote on Justice Alito, who is currently sitting on the court, because he was a Bush nominee and they didn't like his ideology. In 1992, Vice President Biden said, quote, the Senate should, quote, seriously consider not scheduling confirmation hearings on the nomination until after the political campaign season is over. Vice President Biden was then an influential senator. He was responsible for scheduling hearings in the Judiciary Committee, which sees it before the full Senate. And he did block a bunch of nominations, not Supreme Court nominations, although then an attorney, or he might have been a judge, by the name of John Roberts, was rejected and not given a vote. He's now the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, but Vice President Biden, then a senator, actually blocked it. In 2007, the number two Democrat in the Senate, he's about to be number one, Senator Schumer, 16 months before an election, argued that the Senate should not consider any nominee by President Bush. The point is that Democrats have argued that for this sort of let's wait and see how the election plays out type mentality on Supreme Court nominations. Now, at the time, it's worth noting that all the Republicans who were saying it's completely fine were furious and irate and said those things shouldn't happen. So let's be clear that neither side is particularly principled here, but because there is so much at stake on the court, and because there is so much influence by a Supreme Court nominee, Republicans want to stop a Democrat nominee from getting on there, and they are using the argument that it's an election year, and Democrats are trying to go the other way. If the president were of the other party, the shoe would be on the other foot for both sides. The reality here is that the president has to nominate someone that the Senate is willing to confirm. Both the president and the Senate are political entities. That is, they respond to constituents and represent those constituents' views, unlike Supreme Court justices, hopefully. So the result here is the president has to nominate someone that the Senate's going to confirm, and if the Senate says they're not going to confirm someone, they may not. So here's how this is going to go. Here's what's going to happen. President Obama, in the next few days, I suspect, had to wait until a proper mourning period for Justice Scalia, is going to nominate someone to be on the court. That person is not going to be, well, that person is going to be designed to be somebody to make the Republicans look bad for opposing them. My guess is that it will be a racial minority, might be an LGBT individual, might be a woman, might be a racial minority. The other option is that he could pick someone who is very moderate, or even a Republican. Word was that they were trying to recruit the Republican governor of Nevada to be the nominee. He is pro-choice. His name's Governor Sandoval. There was talk about appointing him. He would still fit the Democrats' ideological criteria, but because he's a Republican governor, it would have been a tough sell for Republicans to oppose him, although he's withdrawn his name. Republicans are currently refusing to hold a vote. They're saying, look, we are not holding hearings. We're not holding a vote. We think this election should be a referendum on whoever... this election should be a referendum, and the party that wins should get the chance to nominate this appointment. We'll see if Republicans hold firm on that. Like I said, President Obama is going to go out of his way to make that as politically difficult for Republicans as possible. So he's going to pick a first judge of some group, or he's going to pick a moderate or someone like that and try to push it that way. We will see what happens, but that's kind of where this is going. I think the big things to take away from this are, first, the Supreme Court is a big issue. It matters a great deal. I would refer you back to our Constitution podcast where we talked a little bit about these different ideas of a living Constitution and originalism, as well as I would strongly encourage you to reject the idea of 4 liberals and 5 conservatives. That's not really how it's gone. It depends on the issue, and I'll put the chart up. I'll have a link to the chart so you can see the statistics and see how the judges agree and disagree with one another on core issues. Thank you so much. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you're in a voting state, please be sure to vote for the person that you think will be the best president. And we will be back in a few weeks. Thanks for downloading the podcast. Be sure to like the Polite Politics Community fan page on Facebook and be sure to tell your friends.